Hey guys, it's Dirt, and you're listening to Pop Culture Network Radio. Imagine some sort of like music there. I don't know. We don't have a theme song or anything for it, but we'll probably figure something out. This is, I guess you could technically call this like the pilot episode. We're going to do this here just to kind of test the podcast waters, see what kind of feedback we get. And today being Friday the 13th, I thought it'd be fun to do today because I want to talk about the Friday the 13th movies. I love the Friday the 13th movies. I grew up on them. I used to run a website. My first website I ran actually was for the Friday the 13th movies. So we're going to talk about that today. We're going to be mentioning a little bit some of the news going on, PowerCon, the Maddie Collector reveals, that kind of stuff. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about the show, the Pop Culture Network, the show, or the Pop Culture Network show, however you want to say it. Because there is a story behind that. People are always asking, like, what's going on with the show? How come it comes out so infrequently and all of that kind of stuff? So we'll discuss that a little bit, too. But this being, you know, Pop Culture Network Radio, we're trying to do the same thing with this show that we're doing with the show. And that is to say, this is not just a toy podcast. This is not just a video game podcast. This is not just a comic book podcast. This is a little bit of everything. Anything that we cover on the website, we're going to bring up here. And it's just kind of an outlet for a bunch of that stuff. A bunch of people said they're looking forward to some sort of podcast from us again, because we haven't really, all we've got right now as far as podcasts go is Comaholics, and that's a straight comic book podcast. And a lot of times we just, you know, after we do that show for a little while, we're a bit inebriated and the show kind of gets off the rails. So this is, you know, opportunity to get focused and to do some more, I don't know, I guess, you know, just something else to listen to. A lot of people, they just want more stuff. They want more stuff from us. It's a good problem to have when people say, you need to do more stuff because I want more of you. Because I ain't getting that from my wife, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, right now today, this being the quote-unquote pilot episode, Friday the 13th, I'm just sitting at home doing this, you know, myself, test it out. I like the idea of doing it on a Friday afternoon. Usually Friday afternoons are pretty good, unless it's a holiday weekend or something. But for the most part, it seems like a safe time to try to record something. But we'd also like to do a show some other time during the week. We can maybe have Scotty. We can maybe have Rick. Yeah, I know, right? Kellen and I will be there. And, you know, try to do something more along the lines of It Figures. But like I said, not beholden to just toys. Like I said, I know a lot of you guys really like toys, and so we will cover stuff that's happening in the toy world, but there's you know, I've got a lot of interests. I have adult ADD, I think, maybe, I'm not sure. I can't focus long enough to find out, but there's just a lot of different things I would like to talk about beyond just toys, but we are going to cover toys because I know a lot of you guys love that stuff. So first up, kind of the news desk stuff. We'll kind of do the, you know, announcements, news stories, whatever up front. So those of you that just kind of want to get the headlines, whatever, you know, here you go. You can get that and then you can tune out afterwards. Other people, I hope you will, you know, continue to listen. But first up, it's worth noting that this weekend is PowerCon. For those of you who are big He-Man fans, PowerCon is this weekend. It's in, I believe, Torrance, California. If you have any idea where that is. And there's a lot of stuff going on, you know, Masters of the Universe related, if you're into all of that kind of stuff. It is, you know, not just PowerCon. It originally started as Power and ThunderCon, I believe they called it, because at the time, you know, Thundercats were actually on the air and kind of a big deal. Thundercats has, you know, died away again. But they still allow for all of that kind of stuff. It's a retro 80s revival overall type of thing. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, Masters of the Universe does get a lot of the attention. That's where the name comes from. But you're also going to have IDW publishing there, and they're going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Icon Heroes is going to be there, and they're going to have some of their Thundercats mini-mates available. And then, of course, Maddie Collector is going to be there with Strobo, which is the convention exclusive. You have to go to a convention of some kind. And usually, you know, you're thinking New York Comic Con, Chicago Comic Con, Toy Fair, San Diego, things like that. But they are also going to be at PowerCon. So if you're going to be at PowerCon, there's some good stuff for you. They always have stuff, toy auctions, charity events, you know, all sorts of stuff toy related and dealing with all sorts of, you know, Turtles, He-Man, Thundercats, even She-Ra, for those of you into She-Ra. And I'm sure bronies are going to be in the house. If you're a brony, you want to get your brony on, then you can go to PowerCon. Now, besides the fact that Maddie Collector is going to be there with Strobo, they've said they are also going to do some announcements at PowerCon. Obviously, it makes sense since they sell Masters of the Universe stuff. They have the power, so to speak. So, they said they're going to have the latest build, the newest version of Castle Grayskull. It'll be on site so people can take a look at it and see how that is progressing, because it is notably still a work in progress. And they are going to have sneak peeks at the 2014 Masters of the Universe Classics line. What exactly they're going to show off, we don't know. They will recap it on MattyCollector.com on Monday. So that's something that I'm sure we will talk about next week, some of the stuff that comes out of that. But I know a lot of you guys are looking forward to it. And since we are talking about Maddie Collector, let's talk about a couple things going on. First of all, next week, let's see here, on September 16th is going to be the Maddie Collector sale for the month. Early access, they will have DC Universe Poison Ivy. They will have the classics Sky High with Jet Sled and Stratos. Then all access starting on Monday. So actually, early access is going on right now. If you're listening to this right now, early access is happening. If you've got the ability, you can go in and grab some of that stuff. But as far as the regular all access, they will have DC Universe Huntress. They will have Batros, which is the Club Filmation figure. Leftovers, Sky High, and Jet Sled, assuming they don't all sell out at early access. They will have the Watchmen, the Comedian figure. That's your Black Freighter figure. And they said, there's no Club Eternia figure in September, but there's two of them in October. And that kind of brings us to the next point of news. They announced, of course, all the stuff that's going to be on sale next month in October. Starting with early access on 10/15, DC Universe Black Mask, DC Universe Lead, which is one of the Metal Men. They are going to have, let's see, Masters of the Universe Classics Merman and the Weapons Pack End of Wars. So those are your four figures for early access. Black Mask, Lead, Merman, and the Weapons Pack End of Wars. Then the All Access sale begins, let's see. Oh, I guess early access is only on the 14th, and then All Access on the 15th. Not as long next month, but they will have Black Mask, Lead. They will have DC Universe Ocean Master, which is the Club Infinite Earth figure. The Masters of the Universe Classic Club Eternia figure, you're getting two of them because there's not one this month. So you're going to get Lord Dactus and Mantenna. So if you're looking for those, you're getting hit double next month. So save up now. Of course, you've got Merman. You've got your Club Filmation figure, which is Nephthu. I guess is how you pronounce that. I honestly have no idea. No clue who that is. You've got the Weapons Pack End Wars, and then they're going to have the quarterly figure, two-pack of the Horde Troopers. I know a lot of people were looking forward to getting Horde Troopers. That's something they've been talking about for a long time. You can get a two-pack. You guys want to build armies of them, so there you go. You've got your army builders there. On a quick note, Cabbage Patch 30th anniversary. Yes, you guys who love Cabbage Patch dolls. I was more of a Garbage Pail Kid myself, but if you love the Cabbage Patch dolls, then 30th anniversary figures are available at Toys R Us. I'm not sure if they're all a Toys R Us exclusive or just two of them are Toys R Us exclusives, but I know that Toys R Us has a blonde and a brunette, I guess. Little girls you can grab. There's no boys? Where are the boy Cabbage Patch dolls? I know, this is like so heartbreaking. But if you're looking for those, if you want to pick up that part of your childhood again, you can head out to Toys R Us. I think those are $30. So a little pricey, but not too terrible, I guess, considering a lot of the retro revival toys. NECA and WizKids have announced that they released a new update to the Tab App Elite. If you've got an iPad, there's a game that's kind of basically HeroClix that you play on your pad. They've done an update, added a bunch of villains, added a bunch of missions, things like that. So you can look forward to all of that kind of neat stuff. We got a review up on the site. Mr. TF Prime did a review of the Samurai Sentai Shinkiger Ika Origami Octozord. If that means anything to you, it's like a giant robotic squid, basically, that transforms. Or I guess I can't say transforms. It morphs. It's a morphin toy. So if you're looking for a nice toy review, he's got that up there. You can check that out. We got some Marvel reviews from Tim Dogg from ClickNation.com. He's doing reviews with Pop Culture Network. We got Mighty Avengers. We got Fearless Defenders and Ultimate Comics The Ultimates, which I will admit, it's my fault that he likes that because I told him how good it was, and he read it, and he agrees. And then Scotty and I did a video this week that's up on the website. You can check us out playing the new Funko Throwdown game, Batman versus Joker. And it's actually not a bad game, but it is a quick game. It's called Throwdown for a reason. You know, once you got the rules down and you know how to play, I mean, this is a game that is meant to be over in like 5 turns. I mean, it is quick. If you're going to sit down with your buddies and, you know, have a beer or two and play this game, you're going to play like best out of 10 or something like that, because it can go pretty quick. But still, fun. And it's from Funko, so it's got some neat little figures involved. So make sure that you check all of that stuff out. So I guess that's about all for the news for now. But like I said, we'll be back sometime next week. We'll be taking a look at some of those Manny announcements. We're going to take a quick break. And we don't really have any commercials right now on Pop Culture Network Radio. But I'm going to reach out Scotty and TFG1 Mike from Geekcast Radio. They do a podcast together. We'll see if we can get something from them and, we'll make an ad for their show and that kind of stuff. Comaholics, we'll try to get an ad together for. We used to have one a long time ago. I don't know what happened to it. And then, if anybody out there is listening, you want to run an ad on here, drop us a line, let us know. You can contact Killen at popculturenetwork.com. He's the editor-in-chief. Talk to him about that. You can also leave us a voicemail line 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call area code 217-953-4025. And get our 24-hour voicemail line. Also, if you happen to be on Skype, look up Dirt Mound, and you can leave a message there for me. So anyway, we'll take a quick break. Be right back. All right, guys, we are back. Let's talk a little bit about the show. We're going to talk about Pop Culture Network, the show, or the Pop Culture Network show, however you'd like to refer to it. And one of the questions we get from people is, what the heck is up with the show? It seems to come out infrequently. We've only done a couple episodes. When's the next one coming? What are you covering? What happened? I thought you were going to get rolling on this a lot sooner. And well, yeah, there's a story behind that, isn't there always? Originally, the idea was that we were going to put a studio in the back of Killen Enterprises. And that was going to be the studio for the show. We have a big green screen kit, basically. And we were going to make a green screen studio. And we were going to mount the lights. And we were going to have a permanent, semi-permanent, whatever spot where we would sit and host the show. And the hope was it was something that we'd be able to go back to kind of doing weekly, having a nice weekly show like we used to do, kind of along the lines of That New Toy Smell and some of the other stuff that we've done. The problem was, once we started moving stuff around in the back of Killen Enterprises, it became apparent that there was no room to film anything in the back of Killen Enterprises. There's just way too much stuff. We have expanded. Killen Enterprises now, when you walk in the front door of Killen Enterprises, you're actually walking in what used to be the side door, the left-hand side of the store, or the west end of the store, if you will, used to be the entire store. Now it's about half of the show floor. It is where you find the toys, the comics, the movies, and the music. The other side of the store, when you walk in, where the checkout counter is, the trading cards, the video game stuff, the Blu-rays, all of that used to be the work room, I guess you could call it. The tech room and the storage room. That's where Killen used to repair all the computers, where he had all the excess stock. And he expanded, and we actually stole a room from the people next door. It used to be like an old storage room. And we turned the kind of work room into part of the store and took the old storage room and turned that into the overstock area and the area where Killen fixes the computers. And then we realized that that wasn't enough space. So we actually took some space from the people next door again and expanded backwards. And we had more space in the back. And that became the overstock room. And it is jam-packed full of video games, toys, computer parts, comic books, old Hero Clicks, just so much stuff back there. And so, you know, when we tried to move stuff around and we tried to find a way to put studio back there, we just realized it wasn't going to work. And originally the idea was at the beginning of June, we were going to start filming the show in the studio in the back of Killen Enterprises. And it wasn't going to happen. So we realized that we need a bigger space. We need a bigger building. We need more than what we have now. So we started looking around and we found a place that looked like it was going to be pretty good. It was bigger. It's a little more expensive, but it looked like the type of place where we'd be able to have plenty of room to expand, plenty of room to have a spot in the back. And I forget exactly what happened. Something happened, and for whatever reason, we couldn't get the building. And I don't know the specifics behind it. And I don't really want to know a lot of times the stuff that happens in the background. But needless to say, it didn't work out, and we had to move on, and that kind of disappeared. So then at the beginning of July, we found a spot in another strip mall that had a big floor, the showroom, I guess you could call it, the retail front. And then it had a massive space in the back that was used for storage and overstock and whatever. And we looked at it, and this would have been perfect. We had plenty of room up front, room in back. We could have set up an actual studio. We wouldn't need to green screen a wall. We would actually be able to build a full studio in the back, mount the lights, have cameras, you know, put in table, desk, you know, whatever, and have an actual studio. And it looked like it was going to be perfect, plus extra room for all the stuff in the back and have the tech area to fix computers and whatever. And looked super, like on paper, they gave us a price. They said, you know, basically it's going to be about X amount of dollars. And that was fine. What they told us was more than we were paying for now, but the extra space we were getting was going to be worth the extra price. And it was in a better location, probably going to have more people coming through, excuse me. And it looked like that was going to be the place to be. So we were all ready to do that, and we were hoping to move there the beginning of August. The guy who was in there was going to be moving out, and we were hoping to be in there the beginning of August. And so we were talking to these people, and we were talking and talking and talking, and, you know, couldn't get a hold of this person, and this person went on vacation, and this person's family member died, and, you know, whatever. And it was taking forever, and we couldn't hear anything, and we realized there was no way we were going to make it in the beginning of August, so then it looked like we were going to make it the beginning of September. So while all of this is happening, we realized that, you know, people are expecting the show, and we're not working on it. You know, we keep waiting to have the studio, and we go, you know, we just need to do something. Get it out there, get it started, and at least let people know that we're still here and we're doing stuff. So we did the first episode of the show. We did the second episode of the show. But we weren't doing it frequently. We were still holding out that we were going to be moving into this other space. Well, we finally get the paperwork from these people, you know, 4.5 weeks, 5 weeks later, whatever. And the price is different. The price that they told us is there. And then they're like, oh, and on top of that, there's fees for this. There's fees for this. There's fees for this. There's fees for this. And because you're in our strip mall, you're going to pay the taxes on the building. So we divide the taxes by all the different people in the building, and you're going to pay the taxes, the property taxes on the building. So the price that they told us suddenly became the price plus like an extra, I don't know, 20%, 22%, something like that on top. And it was just like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, it was basically like they had lied to us. Excuse me. So we just had to say, you know, that's not going to work. You know, sorry. There's just no way. You know, because we felt like they had lied to us. So he made a counteroffer. And from what I've heard, they didn't even respond to the counteroffer. So it's just like, whatever. So there's another spot now near the spot we're at, trying to see if maybe we can move in there. But, you know, it's one of those things where everything looked like it was falling into place, and then slowly it all started to break away. And then it looked like everything was going to fall into place, and then it all broke away. And then it looked like it was going to fall into place, and it all broke away. So that's kind of what's going on with the show, is we have in our mind what we want the show to be and what we don't want the show to be. And so far, we've only been able to do the show doing it more or less as what we don't want it to be. We want it to have a more professional look. We want it to have more of a stable look. We want it to have, I don't even know how else to really say it, but we don't want it to look like a bunch of dudes with a camera goofing around and putting it on YouTube. And I know a lot of people like that, and a lot of people think that's cool, and a lot of people are, you know, they like those types of things, but we really want something that looks nicer than that. So for now, you know, we've been talking, we want to do the show number 3. It looked like we were going to be moving, so we were kind of holding off, but now it turns out we're not moving. So now we're, you know, looking at ideas for doing the show number 3. And if you've noticed the last, you know, couple episodes, we've tried to mix it up, you know, talk about video game stuff for a little bit, talk about toys for a little bit, talk about, you know, something else. We're trying to mix it up and keep it fresh and not talk about the same stuff over and over and over and over. So that's what's going on with the show. So you guys, that's, you know, a lot of you want to know the stuff about that. If you have any other questions, you've got any other comments, whatever, again, you can email them to me, dirt@popculturenetwork.com. You can call our 24-hour voicemail line, 217-953-4025. Or just stop by the forums. Go to jointheforums.com, the official forums of the Pop Culture Network. So we are going to take another quick break, and then when we come back, we are going to talk about the Friday the 13th movies, since today is Friday the 13th. All right, guys, welcome back to Pop Culture Network Radio. As always, I am your host, Dirt, and happy Friday the 13th. Today we are going to talk about Friday the 13th movies. And it's kind of funny, I've always loved the Friday the 13th movies. Always, always, always. When I was in college, and you know, I'm going to date myself here, back in 1996, one of the years I was in college, internet was new. It was, you know, fairly young. Not a lot of stuff to find out there all the time. Friday the 13th was really not represented on the internet. There was stuff for Halloween, there was stuff for Hellraiser, there was some Texas Chainsaw Massacre stuff, you had a lot of stuff for Nightmare on Elm Street, but really nothing for Friday the 13th. At the time, there were like two big websites. One of them was like University of Ohio, some other student had his own website up on there that kind of talked about Friday the 13th movies, and there was another site, I can't remember what the name is now, but whoever ran it eventually got CrystalLake.com and became the official Friday the 13th Sean Cunningham approved website. But at the time, that was it. There wasn't anything else. So I started my own Friday the 13th website. This is before PopCultureNetwork.com. This was before ThatNewToySmell.com. This was before VideoGameLosers.com. This is, like I said, 96, 97, I started this. And there were several versions of it over the course of, 5-6 years. I did it on Tripod. I did it on Angel Fire. I did it on GeoCities. I did it on Homestead.com. A lot of people listening go, oh, yeah, I remember those. Basically, any place I could find that had free web hosting, I would log in, create an account, and I would do basically a new version of my Friday the 13th website. I was constantly working on it. At the time, this was back in the day when if you wanted to build a website, you had to know the HTML. Like, you would open Notepad on your computer, and you would do, greater than HTML, or less than HTML, greater than, and hit enter. And then less than, head, enter. And then you'd type, title, and type the title, and then you'd have to close out the brackets. And then body, back, BG, color, equals, quote, 0000000, quote, greater than. And you had to, type everything out. All the graphics I made in Corel Paint Shop Pro, actually, it wasn't even Corel. It was a JASC Paint Shop Pro version 3. Anyway, so if you go out on the internet and you search for the Dirt Mound and Friday the 13th, you'll run across some of these old time capsules. And I don't think I've touched any of these since about the time that Jason X came out. And that was, 2001, maybe 2002. I kind of forget when that movie came out. So if you go and you look, I've been a pretty big fan of Friday the 13th. If you watch, my Facebook page, whatever, sometimes I'll change my my profile stuff to match Friday the 13th. I've been a big fan for a long time, and I love days like this, especially today. It's been really hot this summer. We've had a very hot summer. August was very hot. September's been very hot. Today it finally cooled off. And I say cooled off, it's like 72 degrees outside, which is cool for right now. But there's a nice breeze. It's supposed to be down in the 50s tonight, and I love that. I love that type of weather for something like Friday the 13th. And of course, I'm going to watch movies tonight. My wife and I are going to sit down. We're probably going to watch Friday the 13th Part 6. I love that one. It's lighthearted. It's fun. But we're going to kind of quickly talk about all the movies here and just kind of go through them. And, of course, it all starts with the original Friday the 13th, came out 1978. I give this movie an A grade, letter A. This is, of course, it sets the tone and the template for everything else that comes. And it was, to be fair, a knockoff of Halloween and a knockoff of Black Christmas and some of the slashers that came before it. But it really is the driving franchise that, pushed things along. It brought Nightmare on Elm Street out. It set the tone and the ability for something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre to come back and do more. I love it. Personally, I love Friday the 13th, and I love the original movie. There are so many good things, and of course, everybody points out Kevin Bacon's in it. Yes, Kevin Bacon, young Kevin Bacon, makes an appearance in the movie. And the big thing for a lot of people, they know that Friday the 13th is about Jason Voorhees. A lot of people who still haven't seen the original movie, or they've seen it so long ago they don't even remember, Jason Voorhees isn't really even in it. He appears in like the last 30 seconds, and that's it. The movie is about his mother, Pamela Voorhees, who's the killer in that one. And she gets decapitated at the end. And it's awesome. I love Friday the 13th movies. And this is a very good mood and atmosphere type film. There is gore in it. I don't think there's really even any nudity. You do see, they play strip Monopoly and they're in their underwear at one point. But I don't think anyone's actually naked at any point in this one. But there is, arrow through the neck and people getting, chopped in the face and all of that kind of good stuff. But it is set a lot more on setting that creepy vibe, that dark tone, and then something jumps out at you, that's what slasher movies are pretty much known for. And this one, of course, being the first one, does it very well before it kind of gets watered down in a lot of the other ones. Second movie, Friday the 13th, Part 2. This is where Jason takes center stage, finally. I give this one a B. It's good. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but I think it does a really good job. One of the things they talk about with Friday the 13th movies is that they went back and they made the sequels. The first several sequels were just trying to basically remake the first movie. The first movie did a good job. It made some money, and they just kind of said, well, let's make another one exactly the same and try to make the money. And after a while, they got tired of doing the same thing every time, and they started to do some different stuff. And you got Jason Takes Manhattan, and you got Jason in Space, and you got Jason versus Freddy, and like all of that kind of stuff. And I think that's where they really lost people. When they were going and they were doing the same, basically the same movie over and over, people really liked it. That's what they expected. That's what they wanted. But they just got kind of lazy about it over time. And I think even though I'd say that Part 2 is not as good as Part 1, it's still really good overall compared to some of the later entries in the Friday the 13th series. It's a bunch of counselors come to get trained to figure out, you know, this, you're going to be your training so that later in the summer when the kids come, you can work with them. And of course, Jason comes. He's mad that his mom got her head chopped off. And so he's going to have his revenge. And in Jason, in this one, he's really just kind of this backwoods hillbilly. This idea that he was a boy who drowned in the lake kind of goes out the window. In the first movie, the mom is exacting revenge against every teenage counselor because she holds every counselor responsible for the death of her son. And then the second one, you find out he's not really dead. He's just been living in a shack in the woods for 20 years, whatever. So, pillowcase on his head, not even the hockey mask. That's his trademark in this one. A lot of people don't remember that, but I still like it a lot. If I'm going to sit down and watch one, this might be one of the ones that I go to a lot of times. Part three is 3D. This is the one where he gets the hockey mask. This one, they relied a little too much on the fact that they were doing it in 3D, and this is one of the ones where they get a little lazy. I give this one a C. Little disappointed in this one overall compared to some of the others. One of the problems I feel with this one is that there's something about it that feels wrong about it. Chris, the female protagonist, she has this story about how Jason attacked her when she was young, and you're not really sure if he like was trying to molest her or if she knew her life was in danger and just somehow got away from him or whatever happens. But for some reason, she goes back to the campground, but she's just kind of weirded out by it. And she's there with her friends for a weekend getaway, and you know, Jason comes and kills everybody. And again, at this point, Jason is still kind of this backwoods hillbilly killer guy. Nothing really remarkable about him, except he just doesn't seem to feel pain. He can get stabbed, he can get, you know, thrown out of a window, he can get chopped, but he just seems to keep coming back. Although, in this one, at the end, she puts a noose around his neck, drops him through the barn, and he supposedly dies. She hallucinates, he comes after her after that. But then once the police come and they're picking up the bodies, they're taking everybody away, they are cutting him down from the barn, so he never got away from the hanging. So he's supposedly dead at the end of three, dead for good, and that's supposed to be the end of it. Four comes along, and four is the final chapter, and four just kind of decides he's not dead. Yeah, sure, she hung him. And, you know, broke his neck, suffocated him, whatever. But he just wakes up in the hospital and kills a bunch of doctors and nurses and heads back to the camp and starts killing at the camp again. Which is, it is really, like, it's ludicrous kind of beyond, it's kind of like a pro wrestling angle in a way where it makes absolutely no sense. But once you get over that ludicrousness, the rest of the movie is really good. I give this one a B. I'd probably rate it a little bit higher if Jason didn't just randomly wake up in a on a gurney. You know, overall, this is a first appearance of Corey Feldman in the Friday the 13th series. I wouldn't say that this is the role that made him a star, obviously, but you do see young Corey Feldman in here. And the acting is well done. Crispin Glover is actually in this one. The acting is well done. The characters are somewhat relatable, believable. I mean, they get a little hokey sometimes. That always happens when adults write teenagers. You know, you have those types of issues. But the gore is pretty good. The production value is good. The acting is solid. So overall, it's a good film, except for that, you know, kind of stupid twist that you get from it that makes no sense. Then we get Friday the 13th, A New Beginning. And this one, I just give this one a straight up D. It doesn't fail, but it's one of those things where it hits all the notes it's supposed to, but in the most lazy way possible. Apparently, when they went back, they did an original cut and submitted it, and the studio was like, well, there's no nudity. Go film someone with boobs. So they filmed something stupid, threw it in there real quick. But, I mean, a lot of the gore, the special effects were lazy. You know, they did the least amount of work possible. They were really, you know, I'm sure they probably slashed the budget on it, and that had something to do with it. But the acting just wasn't as good. You got one of the actors, I can't think of his name, but he was Arnold's friend on Different Strokes through, you know, several seasons. He's in this. You'll recognize him. But for the most part, the movie is just not very well done. And I fault a couple of the actors there. A couple of the actors were really not very good at all. But some of them, I think, did a really admirable job with what they had. The key thing with A New Beginning is that Jason, at the end of part four, did die. Tommy Jarvis, who is Corey Feldman's character, chopped him in the head with the machete, just started beating him up, just destroyed him, you know, whatever, mangled his body up. And that was the end of Jason. And that was meant to be the end. And it ended with you not really sure if Tommy Jarvis's character is sane or if this has driven him insane and what the deal is. And so in part five, it's called A New Beginning because at the end of this movie, Tommy Jarvis becomes Jason and becomes a killer. And if that's not bad enough, the entire movie, there's a killer running around and you're supposed to think that maybe it is Tommy Jarvis, and it's not. It's just this other random dude. Some guy you've never seen before. He's upset about someone who died that you didn't know they had a connection to. It's that Scream 2 kind of problem where Scream 2 added these characters that had these relations to the first movie but weren't in the first movie. So you didn't know they were out there, so it didn't have any real impact when you found out who they were. That was kind of the problem with this one. And, you know, so you end up with some random guy who's dressed up like Jason, which doesn't explain why he can be shot and stabbed and thrown out of windows and everything and not seem to take any damage or die until the very end. I mean, the movie's just, it's all over the place. It's got a lot of problems, so I'm giving that one a D. The only redeeming value is a couple actors turned in a pretty good job. But for the most part, just not good. But it all gets redeemed. The series gets redeemed in part six, Jason Lives. I give this one an A. I love this movie. This is the one I'll probably be watching tonight with my wife. I love this movie. This is, I think, where the Friday the 13th series kind of went from, you know, the thing for, it was a series that was primarily for drive-ins and kind of like the midnight showing movies. You would go with your friends on Friday night, but then, you know, by next Monday morning, everybody'd forgotten about the movies. Part six is where it started to kind of come around. It started to become more of a pop cultural event. You know, people actually talking about how much fun it was to go, and there's a new Friday the 13th. Everybody, let's go to the, you know, Chinese restaurant, and we'll eat, and we'll get liquored up, and then we'll go see the movie, and we'll have a good time. You know, that type of event type of thing. This movie was really well done. I don't know if there's really anyone in it that you would recognize in this particular installment, but it was a movie that it didn't take itself too seriously. The opening credits, you get kind of a take on the James Bond movies. They do a close-up on his eye, and then inside the iris, there's a Jason, and he slashes, and blood comes out. Kind of like the whole James Bond shooting at the screen, and the blood comes down type of thing. There are jokes about people have a strange sense of entertainment. This guy, this caretaker at the graveyard says as he looks into the camera. You know, it's a little hokey in some ways, but at the same time, it's got that, like, party feel. It's got that fun movie feel. So it's, there are parts where it's intense, and there's parts where it's gory, and there's parts where, you know, the fun type stuff is happening. But, you know, for the most part, it's just a fun, good movie. And so I really enjoy that one. And Killen's going to make fun of me for cracking my voice there when I said movie. But regardless, I love Part 6, Jason Lives. And of course, it's called Jason Lives because this is where Jason comes back as the uber zombie. Tom McLaughlin? No, wait, that's the director. I forget the actor's name. Anyway, Tommy Jarvis character this time around, he goes to dig up Jason. He wants to put Jason to rest once and for all. He's going to cremate the body so that in his mind, you know, he can put Jason away and not, you know, be haunted by him anymore, not think about him anymore. And so he gets pissed off. He grabs a piece of the wrought iron fence and just starts stabbing the dead body. And the piece of metal gets struck by lightning and it reanimates Jason's corpse. And it's a supernatural event. You know, it's to me, it makes a lot more sense than Jason just waking up on a gurney. I mean, it's, yeah, struck by lightning. Does that bring people to life? It brought Frankenstein back to life. And that's kind of what they're, you know, kind of poking at here and making fun of. And this is where Jason finally becomes that unstoppable beast. You shoot him, you stab him, you hit him with the car, you set him on fire, you choke him, you know, whatever you try to do will not stop him because now he is a zombie and he is coming back to destroy. And in fact, the movie ends, they can't even really defeat Jason. So he just wraps a chain around Jason's neck and the other end of the chain around a big rock and dumps him in the lake. So he's just trapped in the bottom of the lake and he can't get out. So anyway, that's a good one. That's also one of those where I think if you haven't seen any of them and, you know, you've got like a Saturday afternoon and you just want to watch something, kill some time and, you know, maybe I'll check out Friday the 13th. That's a good one to, you know, just kind of check out. Move on to part 7, which is The New Blood. And I'll give this one a B. I enjoyed this one overall. Friday the 13th, The New Blood. This brings in, if Jason's this unstoppable, you know, monster, then who can really stand up to him? And the only thing that really comes to mind is Carrie. If you think of the Stephen King story, the telekinetic girl, Carrie. And so they basically kind of steal that character a little bit and create this character of Tina, who has this telekinetic ability. And she is going out to the woods with her psychiatrist to, you know, try to work out these mental issues that she has, her telekinetic abilities, which she doesn't really believe she has and she's kind of freaked out by, and the doctor wants to exploit. He wants to try to get this on camera. He wants to try to get some proof. He's going to make $1 million selling this girl's story. All under the guise of trying to help her and trying to work her way through these issues that she has. At the same time, of course, cabin next door, having a party, a bunch of teenagers out there. They're getting drunk for the weekend. They're celebrating, you know, it's somebody's brother's birthday. So everybody's out there to have a good time. And the telekinetic girl, apparently, when she was at Crystal Lake as a child, her father was abusive, was attacking her mother. She had some sort of incident where she caused the father to the dock to break apart, and he fell into the lake and he drowned. His body was never recovered, and so she starts to think, well, if these powers are real, maybe I can pull my dad out of the lake. And she's standing there, and she makes some sort of mental connection with Jason, who is still chained up to this big rock in the bottom of the lake. And she tries to free him, thinking she's freeing her dad, and instead she frees Jason. Jason goes on a rampage, and, you know, you get all sorts of, like, awesome fights between them. just, you know, levitating objects smashing into him, breaking apart parts of the house, and setting stuff on fire with her mind, and, you know, all of this kind of neat stuff that happens. Plus, you get a healthy dose of people getting an axe to the face, people getting a machete, you know, cutting off their head, all that good type of stuff that you want to see in this type of movie happens in there as well. The acting overall, not as solid. Tina, her boyfriend, you know, they do pretty good jobs. The mom, all of you guys who, you know, watch your 80s cartoons, the mom, she actually did a bunch of voices for shows like Care Bears. And I think, Shirt Tales and things like that. So you'll actually recognize her voice from some of those cartoons, that you watched, growing up. So it's good. It's not great, but it's good. I still enjoy it quite a bit. Next up, Jason Takes Manhattan. This is one of those where they said, we got to do something different. We got to get him out of the camp. So they said, Jason Takes Manhattan. And of course, if you've seen it, you know, they're only in Manhattan for the last, you know, 10-15 minutes of the movie. Mostly takes place on a cruise ship. Kids on a cruise ship heading out to New York for their big senior trip. Jason tags along and offs everybody on the ship. It drifts into shore. The couple survivors who are left make it to New York on a lifeboat. They think they finally escaped Jason, but of course he climbs up the docks in New York City. Most of it, I believe, was filmed like maybe in Vancouver or Toronto. I'm not sure exactly. But they did do some of the shots in Times Square in New York. So that was pretty cool. One thing to note is that this marks the return of Kane Hodder as Jason. He made his first appearance in 7. He comes back in 8. And then he reappears in 9. Reappears in 10. And then after that, they decided to replace him with other actors, which is a shame. Another thing to note is Kane Hodder in this one, he attacks a guy in a diner, throws him into a mirror behind the counter. The guy he throws is the guy who plays Jason in Freddy vs. Jason later on. So kind of neat how some of that stuff interacts. But overall, the movie, one of my biggest problem, besides the acting being bad from a lot of the people, one of my biggest problems with the movie is that the look of the movie, the way it was filmed and where it was filmed, it looked like a lot of the syndicated TV shows at the time. So if you saw something like Friday the 13th, the series, let's say, or if you were watching War of the Worlds, or some of those other sci-fi, even, you know, to be fair, Star Trek Next Generation and some of that stuff, it had that same kind of look. And it's kind of hard to describe. Super Force, you know, was the same way. It's kind of hard to describe where, I mean, everything's professional, but it still has that kind of low-budget, made-for-TV look, and this kind of has that same look. It's kind of the same problem that Friday the 13th Part 5 had. Although 5 had, like, the low-budget movie look, this is more like the mid-budget TV show look, I guess you could say, like a syndicated TV show. And it ends with Jason in the sewers, which apparently in New York City, they flood the sewers every night at midnight with toxic waste. And Jason gets caught in the toxic waste and it turns him back into a child. And they leave him there to die in the sewers. And that's how Jason Takes Manhattan ends. I give this one a D. Didn't really care for it. Not very well done. Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, Part 9. This is the first from New Line Cinema, when they were able to get the rights. And, of course, they wanted to, Sean Cunningham was like, let's get Jason out of the hockey mask. Let's get rid of the camp. Let's, you know, change everything we can. And there are times, I go back and forth on this movie, there are times when I want to give it credit for the things it does that are different. But there are times when I just hate it for distancing itself so much from what came before. On the days I like it, I want to give it a B. On the days I hate it, I want to give it a straight F. And so it's really kind of hard for me to find a spot in between. Basically, they change the story of Jason where he's not this unstoppable zombie, but in fact, there's some sort of demon within him. And the demon can make itself reborn in the bodies of relatives. So, for instance, if he goes out and kills his niece, then he can jump into his niece's body and be reborn as Jason, and he's strong again, all the damage is gone, and he's back to square one as an unstoppable killing machine. And there's some sort of mystic dagger that can be used by a family member to kill him and send him to hell once and for all, and no one's been able to do it because he can body swap and everything. He can jump into someone who's not a family member, but when he does that, he doesn't become Jason again. He just possesses that person, and then when he jumps out of their body, they die and melt and fade away. And they were trying to kind of explain, like, how he's able to keep coming back and how he can suddenly appear somewhere he hadn't been before. And they were trying to do it with the body jumping and everything. And like I say, I want to give it credit for coming up with something new. But at the same time, I do kind of hate it for what it changed so drastically. So, you know, I go back and forth on it. Sometimes I want to give it a B. Sometimes I want to give an F. But... you know, I'm really kind of torn on it, and I try to stay away from it. I try not to watch it very often. It does have Erin Gray in it, if you remember Buck Rogers. She was in the Buck Rogers TV show, and that makes it worth watching, just because she's in it. But beyond that, it's time to move on. Now, following Jason Goes to Hell, we had Jason X, which is also known as Jason in Space. This is a movie that divided a lot of fans. Again, they tried to do something different, but I'll give this one a B. I enjoyed this one a lot more because it tried to do the same thing it did at the camp, only this time the camp is a spaceship. And I know that sounds, you know, whatever. But really, the fun of this movie is that it tries to stay true to its core when it does something different, as opposed to Jason Goes to Hell, which tried to kind of push everything else aside and be something different than what Friday the 13th was ever before. This actually tries to keep the same feel. Now, how does Jason get into space? Well, basically, modern time, the army decides that, you know, they want to capture Jason and they want to use him to try to develop some sort of super soldier, some sort of unstoppable killing machine that they can drop behind enemy lines, like a, you know, biological weapon. And so they try to capture him, but they freeze him in cryogenic storage. But before he goes, he causes a lot of havoc, kills a bunch of people, whatever. And so when he's frozen... everybody else is dead who's working on this top secret project, so nobody knows they're there. Several hundred years later, Earth is, you know, a big sandstorm, basically, and a bunch of college kids who are on a field trip come back to Earth for an archaeological dig, and they happen to find the cryo storage unit where Jason is, so they take him back up to their spaceship, they head back to Earth 2, New Earth, New Genesis, whatever the heck they're calling their you know, futuristic space colony. Jason thaws out. He wakes up. And he ends up falling at one point in a fight. He falls on a medical bay, like a sick bay bed. And the sick bay looks at his body, realizes that a lot of his body is missing. A lot of it's hurt. The DNA is damaged. The cells are damaged. And it tries to fix him as best it can. And the only way it can do it is by giving him metal components. It has to get rid of the flesh and the organs and replace him with machinery, robotics, cybernetics in order to rebuild Jason. And so it ends up making Super Jason, Cyborg Jason, this futuristic version of Jason. And he becomes the robotic killing android. And you know, again, hokey, silly, but funny. Even the gore is kind of funny in a lot of spots. There's a guy who gets dropped on one of the archaeological driller machines, and the machine, it looks like a giant corkscrew, and so the body hits and he's impaled, but because it's in that corkscrew shape, he starts to twist on it. You know, after he's dead, the body's, you know, twisting down on it. It's just some kind of neat, fun gore stuff, kind of in the same vein as Part 6. Doesn't take itself too seriously, has a lot of fun. But it still looks nice. And a piece of trivia for you. Jason X was the first completely digital movie. They filmed it in on film, but then they took all the film and scanned it into the computer, made it 100% digital. They did all the special effects, the CGI, all of that type of stuff, and then printed it back out onto film for theaters. So it was the first. Nowadays, digital movies are all digital now. I mean, there's no film anymore. Everything is straight to a hard drive, gets edited on the workstations, and then it's sent out to theaters. A lot of digital theaters now don't even get the film, but you know, they'll print it on film to send it to the older theaters. This was the first movie that was 100%. It all went in the computer, all the editing, all the processing, all of the special effects, and then it got printed back out. So that's kind of a neat piece of trivia for you, Friday the 13th, its place in Hollywood history. Following that, we get Freddy versus Jason, which, you know, I wanted to like it so much more than I actually did. They got rid of Kane Hodder for the first time. The guy who I was talking about for Jason Takes Manhattan, Ken Kurtzberger, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. He becomes Jason in this one. And really, it's a C movie. Like I said, I wanted to like it so much more. When you're going to bring Freddy and Jason together, it really has to be special. And there are so many problems with this movie. Basically, Freddy wants to terrorize kids with Jason so they'll have nightmares so that he can then kill him. But Jason's too efficient a killer, so then he tries to destroy Jason. And you just had all these problems with Freddy haunting people in the real world and taking over their body, possessing them in the real world, and Jason, they were able to inject Jason with sleeping drugs to make him pass out, and it was a poor Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It was a poor Friday the 13th movie, and you mix them together, it just wasn't. You can enjoy it if you've got a bunch of friends and you're having drinks and, you know, you're going to sit around and watch it and not take it seriously. But as far as, you know, the atmosphere was wrong, the mood was wrong, the look was wrong, the characters were wrong. There's just so many problems with the movie. So I'm going to give it a C. It's probably more of a D movie, but I'm going to give it a C because they tried. And it was, you know, pretty good exposure. And then finally, part 12. You would call it the Friday the 13th remake from 2009, I believe it was. This is from Platinum Dunes Entertainment, same people that did the horrible Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. Were they involved with the Nightmare on Elm Street remake? I'm not sure. But they did Friday the 13th. They took elements from the first two movies, kind of combined them together. They added the hockey mask from 3, tried to give it a fresh twist. They tried to make... The problem is they tried to mix too much, and they took little pieces from here and little pieces from there, but it ended up being less than the sum of all its parts. Again, I'll give it a C. Some of the acting was good. The production was very good on it, but something about it was off. It didn't click. You had problems with... Jason was living in tunnels underneath the camp. And that's why no one was ever able to find him, why he just kind of disappeared. He falls in love with this, well, he doesn't fall in love with, but he sees this girl who reminds him of his mom or his sister or something, and so he kidnaps her and takes her to the tunnels, and the friends have to come out and rescue her, and they tried to make him back into that redneck, hillbilly, half-breed, mongoloid, whatever he was in the first couple movies. But at the same time, he's unstoppable, he's stabbed, he's shot, he's whatever, and nothing slows him down. There were parts of it that I really wanted to like. I really liked the opening sequence where they tried to give it that feel of the old movies. They're kids camping, they get attacked, they do the whole thing with the sleeping bag beaten against a tree that everybody seems to love that sequence. But then as the movie went on, it just became too much of, you just felt like Jason was this random dude who was, he was mortal, but he was hard to kill. He just didn't seem that special. They took away from him, I think, the things that made him neat and special. He didn't seem, there was something about the mystery of him in the first couple appearances he had where you weren't really sure if there was something... supernatural about him, or if he was just, you know, hard to kill, like Steven Seagal, or if he's the character from the later movies where he's that zombie that's come back from the dead. He's a supernatural character. You're never going to be able to destroy him. They tried to mix the two, and it ended up just not really working, and that was part of the problem. I wanted to hate it more than I actually did. I have to give it credit for being a better film. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I will still say that remake was god-awful, terrible. This one, not as bad as that one. I didn't hate it as much, but still wasn't great. And I really just, I can't really recommend it. I can't really say that that's the one you need to see. It had its moments, but there were so many problems with it. If it had gone through maybe another rewrite, they had worked out some of the issues, they had made Jason a little more consistent, maybe try to do something with his mom in there that they didn't do, it would have been a lot better. But anyway, happy Friday the 13th, everybody. That's your look at the Friday the 13th movies. Again, I am Dirt. This is Pop Culture Network Radio. We are at the hour mark, so we're going to wrap it up for today. But don't forget, you can send me an email, dirt@popculturenetwork.com. You can send a voicemail through our 24-hour voicemail line, area code 217-953-4025. Friday the 13th. It's going to be over by the time most of you listen to this, but Halloween coming up, so I want to hear from you guys. What are some of your favorite movies to watch for the Halloween season? Of course, there's Halloween and some of those sequels that were actually pretty good, but beyond Halloween, what are some horror movies you love to watch during the Halloween season? Phantasm, maybe? Exorcist, maybe? What are some of the ones that you like to get into during the season? So drop us a line. Let us know. Thanks for listening, everybody. Send us some feedback so we know what you like, what you didn't. And if you've got some music maybe that you think we could use for intros, outros, you can send those to me. If you've got a theme song, you know, in mind or something, let us know. If there's anything else you want us to talk about specifically on the show, like I said, we'll talk about toys, we'll talk about comics, talk about video games, talk about all that kind of stuff. So anything particular you want to talk about, let me know. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.